Welcome, members. We'll call a meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Division to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Junkie?
Here.
Representative Welty? Representative Finstad?
Here.
Representative Doty?
Here.
Representative Faust?
Here.
Representative Hamilton?
Here.
Representative Hansen? Representative Heidgerken?
Yes.
Representative Magnus?
Here.
Representative Olin?
Here.
Representative Otremba, Representative Peterson, Representative Poppy,
here.
Representative Shemansky,
here.
Thank you, members. There's four Democrats missing today, so I just thought I'd point that out. So thank you for everyone that is here on time, because we're even 5 minutes out. The bus with the dairy folks were kind of waiting. They were running into a little weather, but they're shuffling in, I think, here shortly. So. All right, there's some milk here on ice. Again, I point out to everyone in the audience, too, and we are the Ag Committee. We deal with food, and there's nothing wrong with bringing us samples of your wares on any day. So we do have that. Representative Erdahl, if you want to join us at the table, that would be fine, and any other members that show up, we certainly, all the inside chairs are empty. We also, members and guests, reminder, shut your cell phones off. And if a cell phone goes off, we got a little can by the coffee pot. And there's a $1 fine if it goes off, and it's been suggested that maybe a $5 fine if you answer. So that's maybe a good policy, too. We'll think about that one. So, and there is coffee. Besides the milk, there's coffee. So if you want coffee and then pour fresh milk in it, like some want to do, that's fine. Audience and members are welcome to that.
What do you want?
Little business at first. We do have the minutes in the file. Representative Hamilton moves approval of those minutes from January 31st. Any comments on that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those are adopted. Today, members, it's Dairy Day on the Hill. What we're going to do is hear a little update from a lot of different folks on the state of dairy, what's going on in dairy, what our different departments and entities in the state are focused on with dairy. You can see we have a rather aggressive agenda on here. We will end the by 11 o'clock, if not sooner. We'd like to get to House File 9 and House File 52, which are the dairy investment tax credit bills. And we'll take a look at those and discuss them as we get there. But until that time, again, while we wait for folks to get in, maybe we'll call the Department of Agriculture up. I know they're here. And they can give us their report in any way they would see fit. Yeah. Welcome to the committee. Gentlemen, introduce yourselves as you go and proceed in any way you wish.
Representative Junkie, my name is Kurt Zimmerman. I'm the Livestock Development Advisor for the Department of Ag.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jim Borbom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
We'll keep our comments brief because of the people that are here today that want to testify. It's an honor to be here representing the state's dairy industry in support of this legislation that you're looking at this year. My role will be just simply to give you a snapshot look at the state's dairy industry. Commissioner Borbom will be talking about the economic impact that it has not only on the dairy farms that are here today, but also the entire state, the rural communities that are involved with our industry. Agriculture is big business in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is the fifth largest agricultural producer in the United States. The U.S. trails only California, Texas, Iowa, and Nebraska. We have $9.8 billion in receipts in livestock and cash receipts. That part of the total that accounts for livestock in the state of Minnesota is $4.9 billion, and dairy and cattle and calves account for about a fourth of that total. So we're talking about a huge economic influence in the state of Minnesota, and Jim will talk about some of that. We currently rank as a state sixth in the U.S. in the number of dairy cows and milk production. We're the fifth largest ag exporting state in the U.S., and we're very proud of that. We've moved up one or two positions in the last year. Dairy products and from the state of Minnesota account for $80 million. This is a huge increase compared to just $13 million in dairy exports in 1990. As far as the number of dairy farms in the state of Minnesota, we have just under 5,200. That is a decline of about 170 farms from a year ago. It's a decline of about 400 farms from 2004. As far as the number of cows we have in the state, we have 450,000. If you broke that down and average it out over the number of dairy farms in Minnesota, we have around 86 cows per farm. You might ask how that trend is changing over the years. We've been increasing the number of cows per farm by about two to four head per year over the last several years. As far as the size of our operations, we have just under 100 dairies that have over 300 cows in the state of Minnesota, and we have around 15 dairies that have over 1,000. So we have quite a range and diversity in our dairy production. As far as where Minnesota stands in as far as percentage of the U.S. total, currently Minnesota's dairy farmers contribute just over 5% of the total U.S. Milk total, some of what you have on the tables in front of you today. That percentage of the total U.S. milk production has gradually decreased. On a positive note, Minnesota's milk production has actually had a slight increase over the last 2 years as far as our total milk production in the state of Minnesota. One of the statistics that we're using to determine whether we're successful or not is, and there are several ways to evaluate that, is average production per cow. Minnesota's production per cow is just over 18,000 overall. The DHIA numbers, those that are under test, is a larger number, over 20,000. But we're, as a state, we're averaging just over 18,000 pounds per cow. That number is ranking Minnesota only 25th, which is a concern to the Department of Ag and the industry. One of the things that we've done, and Commissioner Hugeson has done, is we've appointed a 14-member dairy profitability advisory committee. We have some of those members that are here today. We'll be taking a look at trying to support the work of the dairy diagnostic teams in achieving their goals. We do have the annual report that if some of you are interested, we do have available, and we'll be glad to provide that as far as an annual summary of the activities and workings. This advisory group will be trying to support the teams and trying to come up with ways to make sure we're getting the most bang for our buck as a state as far as the funds that have been contributed to that program. One of the industry trends that, just in closing, I'd like to mention is the increased use of distillers' grains in some of the cow rations. About 3 pounds of distiller's grains on average is being fed on average to our cows in our state of Minnesota, with DDGs being produced in abundance. We feel that that can be a higher percentage as we go along. So that's just a quick snapshot look of how the state of Minnesota is doing as a dairy industry, and with a look at the impact from an economic standpoint for the state, for the local and regional economy. Assistant Commissioner Borboom will have that.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. To members, as you go through your packets, Colby Sullivan, our legislative analyst, has produced a nice handout. Representative Heigerk, and in particular, you asked for comparisons with other states. It's on there. So that's, I think, what Mr. Zimmerman was referring to on some of his comments, too. So welcome, Assistant Commissioner Borboom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to just talk about the impact of the dairy industry, and really the impact of the dairy enterprise begins on the farm. As many of you know, and some of you have been dairy farmers, every day you purchase items such as feed, farm supplies, fuel, and veterinary care. In the day-to-day operation of your business, you also acquire breeding livestock, purchase machinery and equipment, or make building improvements. I looked at farm business management records for 2005, and the average dairy farmer spends over $536,000 a year on these kinds of expenditures. And the two primary expenditures are feed in the amount of $106,000 per year and capital improvements. Again, that's building improvements in the amount of $102,000. These types of expenditures and investments annually pump about $1.2 billion into the state economy. As with other agriculture production sectors, much of the dairy industry has an impact through the so-called multiplier effect, where one business creates opportunities for another business. Our most recent ag marketing services study for our agency showed that the total economic impact of the dairy production and processing is about $10 billion statewide. That same report showed that total economic or employment impact of the dairy industry is 76,000 jobs. Many of you know that Minnesota is home to several cooperatives and private companies that lead the nation in dairy food processing. They include companies such as Land O'Lakes, Associated Milk Producer, Bonguard's Creamery, First District, Kraft, Kemp's, Davisco, and some to name a few. In 2002, our agency conducted a study of First District. First District is located in Litchfield, Minnesota, and has a population of 6,800 people. Now, Representative Erdahl knows that district very well. The processing plant in that district generates $200 million in annual sales, employs 150 jobs, and milk comes from about 1,200 farmers in that district. Well, in addition to this direct economic impact, the First District processing plant also generates indirect and induced economic impacts of about $580 million and more than 4,000 jobs. So this is just, again, an example of the kind of economic activity that farmers incur through, again, the purchase of feed, supplies, and fuel, as well as building improvements. In sum, the total multiplier effect of a dairy cow is about $15,000 of economic activity, so I appreciate your support of a dairy investment credit, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Any questions for the department? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would be, when you think about agriculture, you think about Midwestern states, not California and Idaho and New York and some of those other states. What is your opinion on why the dairy industry has been able to excel in those states and why we're losing market share here?
Well, I've got an opinion on that, and I think we have excelled as a state of Minnesota. The western states that you mentioned, Representative Hamilton, really have one industry. They have an industry that's basically started from the ground floor and went up. So any major change was an increase. Minnesota has an industry that really has two parts. We have a very established and experienced set of dairymen who began in the 50s and 60s, and equipment is such where they may be on the retiring end of it. But we also have a very progressive in a part of our industry that is showing incremental growth and has done a very good job expanding and growing, much like the western states have. But because we have two industries, what we're seeing, I think, in the overall numbers of gradual declines is that the industry of retirees is maybe just slightly outpacing those that are building and growing the industry. I believe we have a very alive and well industry here in Minnesota, but we have both, and I think that's different than the western states.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Chairman. My question is, we've got a chart here that shows the number of milk cows, and we show in Minnesota for the last 25 years a significant decline in that. What has the actual milk production done, though, from the state as a total for the last 25 years? You mentioned the last couple of years it's increased slightly. What's the 25-year trend on that been?
I can get you the exact information on that. We've showed some gradual increase as a state. The concerning part is that we haven't been able to keep up to the production per cow increases of many of our other competing states in the Midwest. And I'll be happy to get that information for you. But in the last 5 years, we've had an increase of about 300 pounds per cow. Many of the other states have shown, of the other states in the Midwest, have shown increases of 800, 1,000, even 2,000 pounds per cow. So we do need to address that and try to improve that production per cow number.
Representative Fowles.
Thank you. I'm referring mostly to the total production of the state, not on a per cow basis.
That is the information that we're sharing with you. The latest DHIA records that I saw just this week, Representative, showed that the cows under test are showing, I believe, about a 20,000-pound average or better. But the overall number, those total cows are around 18,000, just over 18,000 pounds per cow.
Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And testifiers, I think a question was asked here before that wasn't addressed. Why has Minnesota gone behind perhaps some of the growth that the other states are experiencing right now. I spent a tour out in South Dakota here, not last summer, the summer before, looking at their growth of dairies out there along the border. And again, in some of the other states, when you look at if you want to do an expansion in the state of Minnesota, you're going to have quite a waiting period and quite a cost factor. And just in order to get through all the government red tape, you go out to South Dakota, there's no basically no wait period at all. You build them out. I mean, there's a difference in mentality in state governments as well that influences where industries go. And I think that when you look at the past, where dairies have been where they are now, there has been a lot of red tape that within the state that other states have not, the farmers have not had to endure. Also, there's other states that have implemented programs, like Wisconsin, for the dairy farmer to get into the HUD program, among other things. They were able to do things that we didn't do here. And I think that government had much to do with where the dairies are in the state of Minnesota and where they're going. And I think that's something that oftentimes is overlooked.
Any comments on that? All right. Thank you, Representative Heigerken. And thank you, folks, for being here. And certainly we'll look more at the dairy profitability and some of these things as we do our budgets, members. But I think that was a good overview. We have the University of Minnesota here in the room. And Jim Lynn, who's with the Animal Science Department. I think it's important as we, again, talking about research in this committee this year, that we have the university in to have us inform us what they are up to with dairy over there, and any information they can provide us would be very helpful today. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed any way you feel fit.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Chairman Junkie and committee members, for the opportunity to talk about our research, teaching, education, and extension programs at the University of Minnesota. My name is Jim Lynn. I've been on the Animal Science Department, or in the Animal Science Department at the University of Minnesota for the past 28 years. The past 11 years I've been, or past 11 years, past 11 months I've been the interim head of the Department of Animal Science. But before that, for the 28 years, I was a faculty member with the responsibilities in dairy extension, specifically in the area of nutrition and doing applied research for the dairy industry. I'm proud to say, though, that today we have a large and excellent group of students studying animal science in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences. We have over 350 students in animal science within our college, which makes us the largest single major enrollment in the college. We continue to increase this enrollment every year. This past fall, we had over 100 new freshmen enrolling in animal science. More than a third of these students in the animal science major are dairy interest-related students. Our enrollment is a reflection of an excellent curriculum, dedicated faculty who are excellent teachers and advisors, and with that, we have several of our teachers and faculty have won awards in their teaching. And a good job is marketed exists for animal science students as well. Some people are worried about the youth of tomorrow, but if they would see and know and get to know our students in animal science, they would not be worried about our students. Our students are smart, hardworking, and enthusiastic young people. They study hard and do well academically, but that is not all they do. And as an example, our students are very successful outside the classroom. This past year, one of our students, Luke Olson from Hutchinson, Minnesota, won first place in the National Dairy Cattle Judging Contest at World Dairy Expo. The first University of Minnesota student to do that in over 40 years. Both of our college and 4-H dairy judging teams placed second nationally at this World Dairy Expo contest. The Gopher Dairy Club, which is having an annual banquet coming up here in 2 weeks, is the largest student club at the University of Minnesota with over 100 members. Our dairy research and extension programs focus on providing answers to the challenges dairy producers face today and the emerging problems they will face tomorrow. I'd like to share a few examples with you today. We have a calf and heifer research facility at the Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca, which conducts research on the best way to raise tomorrow's dairy cows. This new facility opened in 2003 and allows research to be done to study the management, health, and nutrition of 700 dairy calves per year. The calves are obtained from three local dairy producers on a contract feeding arrangement from 2 to 200 days of age. The work is conducted in partnership with Ridley Beef Company International, locally known as Hubbard Feed. The goal of this research is to discover new and better ways to feed and raise heifer calves during the first six months of their life, and leads to a healthier and higher producing dairy cow for our Minnesota dairy herds. Another area of research and extension we are active in is keeping cows comfortable. Our particular focus area is compost barns. Compost barns, just to give you a quick update on what they are a new housing method used to improve cow comfort and reduce lameness in loose housed dairy cows. The uniqueness of a compost bedded back dairy barn is the bedding material, which is usually a sawdust origin, is allowed to build up under the cows for several months. The bedding is aerated and turned every day, just like compost piles, and allowing it to compost then while being directly underneath the cow, and a soft, comfortable bed for the cow to lay on. New sawdust or bedding material is added as needed to keep the cows dry, and clean, and comfortable. The uniqueness of this type of barn is manure storage is directly under the cow and being composted before being hauled to the field. One of our faculty, Marcia Andrus, and a team where she works with about a dozen research and extension people in various departments across the university, are evaluating how these compost barns work in on-farm situations. The information they are discovering indicates compost-bedded packed dairy barns work very well in small to medium-sized dairy herds, which are typical of our Minnesota dairy herds today. We also are in the process of converting an old sheep facility on the St. Paul campus to a compost-bedded packed dairy barn. With this facility, we will study different types of bedding material and different ways to enhance the composting of the bedding material. On June 21st and 22nd of this year, the University of Minnesota will host an international conference called Compost Dairy Barn Conference and Tour, an A to Z conference on compost dairy barns. We at the University of Minnesota are recognized as the world's leader an information resource on compost-bedded packed dairy barns. Our extension dairy team publishes a monthly newsletter and shares its findings with people in Minnesota and across the U.S. Cow longevity is another area that is facing major challenges and a challenge for our dairy producers. The average dairy cow remains in a dairy herd for only about 2.2 lactations. Producers have a major investment in getting the cows into the herd, and having these cows leave the herd early is a major profit robber. We are researching the possibility that changing genetics and the addition of hybrid vigor through crossbreeding may improve reproduction in our dairy cows and increase productive life. Specifically, we are evaluating crossbreeding Holstein cows with Jersey and a Montbéliard, if I pronounced that correct. It's a French breed, French dairy breed, and we're doing this research in St. Paul, and we're crossbreeding with Scandinavian Reds at our outreach center, West Central Research and Outreach Center in Morris. Our early results on crossbreeding show definitely we are getting higher milk components in terms of fat and protein, as well as there is apparently a trend in improved reproduction with the hybrid breeder and crossbreeding. Milk quality is another one of our major focus areas for our research and extension efforts. One of our most visible programs in that regard is the Quality Counts Program, a statewide campaign to improve milk quality in Minnesota. This is an excellent example of how Minnesota is working in partnership with the industry. There are more than 25 partners in this program, including the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Minnesota Board of Animal Health, Minnesota Milk Producers Association, Minnesota and the other Minnesota dairy producers, most of the processors in the state. Through this program, there's been a steady improvement in milk quality and a lowering of somatic cells. This last month, the January numbers released by Minnesota DHI show the median somatic cell in the Minnesota herd was 285,000. This is the lowest ever for the month of January. The university has an instrumental effort in this program through the development of new processes and tools for producers and other parts of the industry to monitor somatic cell levels in dairy herds on a daily basis. And through our extension educational programs on milk quality for producers, veterinarians, milk yield plant, and the cooperation of others with this, we feel we made a significant progress in reducing somatic cells in Minnesota. This is only a quick brief overview of the type of research and extension efforts that we are involved in. In addition, we have programs to help producers in marketing, business decisions, and labor management. We improve dairy products through the cooperation and support of our Department of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota. Also, I know that last week Dean Jeff Klausner from the College of Veterinary Medicine was in front of this committee to talk about efforts in Yoni's disease and bovine tuberculosis, so we partner with them as well. The dairy industry is an important part of our regional economy, as you just heard from the Department of Agriculture. At the university, we are proud to provide the research and the education to the dairy industry and be a part of this viable and economically important industry to this state and the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lind. We appreciate you being here. Those numbers of students were very good news, I think, to this group. Could you just amplify that a little bit? Where are these students coming from? Are they starting as first-year students? Are they being fed in from our MinSKU system in some cases? Are they mainly Minnesotans versus outstate? Can you just give us a snapshot? How do you recruit these people? Where are they coming from? Having 350 animal science students is impressive, and I guess we want to learn a little bit from you what you're doing right there.
Okay, thank you. Be happy to. Most of our students come in as freshmen. Probably less than 20%, maybe 15 to 20% are transfer students from other institutions, either within or outside the state of Minnesota. So most of them enter as freshmen. Approximately half of these freshmen are coming from urban areas initially. They are interested in pre-veterinary medicine because we are also the host host department for entering through the college into the veterinary college. And so about half of them are interested in pre-vet when they originally come to animal science. Most of our animal science students then are from the rural area, a good portion of them. We are actively involved in recruiting of these students across the state. We have faculty members and an academic advisor in our department that goes out and talks and recruits students from high school. So I think we have a very mixed and a very diverse student population in the department, both from rural and urban.
Also, one more question I would have is, you have an active research program, and that's very good, too. And one of the concerns of this committee and other rural members that have sat around this table in the past is, as we downsized our county extension offices to the point that really most have a 4-H person, maybe a part-time ag person, but certainly those dairy specialists that used to be fairly prevalent in all the offices seem to be spread out or non-existent in some areas of the state. How do we transfer this land-grant university research out into to the producers and the farmers that rely on you for that information, particularly in light of going to the regional offices? And again, not a lot of hands-on, at least perceived not to be a lot of hands-on interaction with that local extension agent and the farmer producer in the counties.
Well, yes, we no longer have a local single county extension educator, and we have gone to regional specialists, but we also have 5 regional specialists in dairy in Minnesota, 2 in the southeast, and then 2 in, one in Hutchinson now, just joined us recently, one in the St. Cloud area as well. And there's one that had been at Morris involved in partly of the more of a livestock person involved in the nutrient management area as well. So we are spread out a little bit more, but we are actively working with these people from campus-based and putting on programs. We try and provide a diversity and ways of getting information to our dairy producers and working with Minnesota Milk Producers Association is one of the things that we actively do, and it's not just holding more meetings, but also providing web pages now as we move in the electronic area more and more, trying to keep up our web pages, keep information there so it's readily available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when producers have time to look for some information that they would need, as well as meetings. We're certainly got cell phones and phones contacts too. So we're trying to meet the needs of the industry as best we can and work with the industry. And I think some of our research shows, too, that we've been partnering with it, and along with our extension programs and quality counts, and partnering with other organizations, industries in the state that are interested in the dairy operation.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of my concerns are the fact that there are only 5 dairy people around the state. I think the closest one to us is like 60 miles. And we talk about websites. They're great. There are a lot of people that use them. But there are also a lot of farmers that are don't have a good internet. They're analogs. And my experience with my internet is it takes you forever to even get in because you're on a dial-up system. Station. So how do you deal with that?
Dr. Lynn.
Thank you. I share your concern. I'm a little bit, I didn't get the white hair from just the snow this morning. So, but when we dial up and throughout the world today with these fancy web pages and everything else, if you're dialing up on a modem, it's very, very slow to download.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we don't concentrate all of our efforts on just web pages. If people would call us, we certainly will send out information to them, or we will visit their farms, our regional extension people, as well as people, faculty on campus. We still make farm visits for them to get the information to them and work with them any way we can. But I share your concern, and I keep talking about it with our faculty and our IT people. In developing web pages, that they're not everybody is directly connected to a DSL type of line or Ethernet immediate access. So, yes, good.
Mr. Chair,
do you
think you're going to add more? Our region is Brainerd, which is 60 miles away, and there are a lot of small farmers. I think Morrison County is out of Brainerd also. And I know that I've heard that they were going to get a specialist in the area of dairy, but what are the probabilities?
Any information on that, Dr. Lynn?
I cannot answer that question today. I'm not sure what the status of that request would be.
And certainly, members, I don't know which direction we'll go, but as we write that ag special for the university, some of these suggestions may be appropriate. Within that request also. I don't know if we'll be successful, but we can send our wishes along anyway, and that's one tool we might have this year. So, any other questions for the university? Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman.
You're just here. You want to brag about that Hutchinson kid, I'm sure.
No.
Huh?
I'd like to.
Please do.
Yeah, certainly we have excellent dairy in McLeod County as well. But the question I have would refer to research on feeding and distillers dried grains, and are you doing substantial research to determine maximum levels of DDGs that you can incorporate into a ration? And secondly, are you beginning to evaluate dairy product quality if there is a substantial component of DDGs in a ration?
Dr. Lynn,
representative. Most of our distillers grain research and within our department has been done with swine and poultry. There's been some beef, and we actually, again, I think we're the world's leading website for distillers grains, in particular as it relates to poultry and swine. And it's, I don't know how many thousands of hits we get per month on it. We have not done a lot of research with distillers grains with dairy. We've partnered a little bit with some of our other institutions across the U.S. South Dakota's done some work and so forth, but directly in our department, we have not done a lot of feeding with distillers' grains.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lynn. We appreciate you joining us, and we've got your number if we need more information.
So. Thank you. Please call.
Minnesota Milk Producers. We have someone's going to come up. Is Pat Luneman here or someone else from the group? If he didn't make it in, Bob, come on down. We got the boss here. Welcome to the committee, and glad to have your groups, a lot of your members joining us today and for Dairy Day, and we know the weather was tough, but we're glad to see everyone made it that could, and I guess we're looking for an update from you on direction we should be taking on dairy, or what's good and what's bad out there right now according to your group. So please introduce yourself for the tape, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Lefebvre, and I'm the executive director with the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I get the job of working for dairy farmers. Mr. Chairman, you said I'm the boss. No, I get to work for them. They're the bosses. Today, actually, Pat Luneman, one of Minnesota Milk's directors, who's a dairy producer up by Clarissa and Representative Otremba's district, was going to come and talk to you today, but I'm sure all of you are fully aware of Mother Nature had some other plans. If Pat gets here, he can certainly jump in if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Pat was going to talk a little bit about his dairy, his operation, and what he has. And while some may not consider him a typical dairy producer, I know Pat certainly would consider himself a typical dairy producer. He milks about 500 cows. It's not necessarily the size that makes him an average producer, but it's really about the impact that he has to the local community around him. His family's involved in his dairy. He has employees that work for him. And he also has a connection to the community, both in, you know, people supplying him with feed, and the list goes on and on. And the arrangement also that he has with neighbors and supplying him with crops, corn silage, Wells haylage, and the recycling of that manure back onto those lands for utilizing the precious nutrients that the manure has. So you heard a little bit about the Department of Agriculture and some of the stuff that they talked about on an aggregate level, and really the dairy industry boils down to people. It's not just the producers on the farm. It stretches across the state of Minnesota, not only in rural Minnesota, but also in urban areas. Today, we have milk for everyone here today. Kemp's and Land O'Lakes, both in the Twin Cities. So certainly can see the impact that we have in the urban areas as well. The issues that we have and what's really facing dairy producers today in Minnesota, and it's been ongoing, but it's not a secret that we have dairy producers that are aging. And as, you know, they're aging, they're looking at options on what they can do for their future. Either retire, get out of the business, which is not something that we like. I mean, we want as many dairy farmers as possible in Minnesota, but some of them are choosing to retire. Others are also looking at making their dairy viable in the future and perhaps transferring that to the next generation. That may be their son or daughter, or that may be someone else. At the same time then, too, we also have others that maybe are looking at getting into the business who maybe haven't been in it. We certainly would encourage everyone to want to enter into dairy production as a career. So we have a lot of that happening, but the bottom line is it's all focused around modernizing our facilities. We do have a lot of old facilities, and they're hard on the people who milk the cows, and they're hard on the cows themselves. So everything has really evolved around or revolves around reinvesting in our dairy facilities and the impact, ripple effect that has into the rest of the economy and jobs. And which is why one of the areas that we're interested in, obviously, is the Dairy Investment Tax Credit. That would help provide some incentives for dairy producers looking at modernizing, which is applicable to all dairymen in Minnesota. We did hear Representative Heigerken talk about some of the regulatory environment. And while that has improved, there still are some irregularities in it, both in the permitting, in the environmental review process, and in zoning ordinances. There's irregularities throughout. And that does have an impact. While many dairy producers may be able to make changes in their operations and go through the process smoothly, it's the mere threat of getting dragged through the mud that dairy farmers are nervous about. And so that also has an impact, and that's an issue that hopefully over time we can continue to resolve. And I think by education and discussion, I think we come up to common sense solutions on that. Healthcare, access, and affordability is something that's very important. In fact, Representative Tremba also is an author of a bill that would have an impact to that, potentially. Those are really some of our top issues that we're focusing on, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to, if I could, perhaps address a little bit about the University of Minnesota. We do agree with Dr. Lynn in that there are good people at the University of Minnesota. There's excellent faculty that are doing as best as they can with what they have. Dr. Lynn did mention the CAF research facility, and we're very happy about that. There's no question. And we're happy that Hubbard Feig or Ridley were able to partner with the University of Minnesota. But unfortunately, good faculty can only go so far. The University of Minnesota's administration in the past has put the university in a very precarious situation for the future and being very supportive for the dairy industry to move forward. They really are lacking in the capacity to do research for dairy producers today and tomorrow. We've had discussions with the previous administration, while I would say I'll characterize it as broken promise after broken promise. Now we are hopeful with the new dean. Seems to be a good guy, so we're hopeful that with the new dean we'll be able to move forward. We have done a lot of work with the university to try and have them build a new dairy research facility. That can help us with renewable energy. It can do some of the things on how people and cows interact. We all know that odor is an issue. It's one of the biggest issues out there, and how can we help combat that? And the list can go on and on. With that, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity, and I certainly do wish that Pat Luneman was here to talk, because he would have done a much better job. He's an actual dairy producer. I'm just a mouth.
Thank you, Mr. Lefebvre, and we do appreciate your comments, and I agree with you that we've had some butting of heads with the university in the past few years, but again, I think we all had the opportunity to meet Dr. Levine, and with the new kid on the block, I think we're giving him a new chance and hopefully some new light in the day here, and hopefully your group continues to meet with him too. I think he's very receptive, at least on the onset, to suggestions and guidance offered by the different groups. So I assume you're meeting with him. If you're not, make sure he gets around to see you. He is traveling the state too a little bit, I understand, so that's very good. Any questions for the milk producers? Thank you for coming up. Minnesota Association of Cooperatives. I think we have a couple folks want to come up and visit. On my list, I have John Funk and Steve Schlangen. I don't know if they're here.
Schlangen.
And we'll let Tiger can introduce him. It's from his district up there. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I am neither John or Steve. They are generally, when it's cold and when the snow starts flying, dairy farmers.
They're up north with Pat Luneman, apparently.
Difficulty making it out of their operations. I'm David Ward. I'm the dairy director for the Minnesota Association of cooperative.
Did you say David Ward?
Ward, W-A-R-D. Yes.
W-A-R-D. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
And I'm the new dairy director for the Minnesota Association of Cooperatives. So this is my first time testifying before a committee like this, and I appreciate the opportunity that you've given us to talk about the dairy industry here today. Minnesota Association of Cooperatives is a trade organization that represents the cooperative interests in the state of Minnesota. And as many of you may know, Minnesota probably has more cooperative activity than any state in the country. We have about 3.4 Minnesotans are touched or members of a cooperative in one way, shape, or form, from farm supply and dairy cooperatives, what some people think is more the traditional form of cooperatives, all the way down to credit unions and senior cooperative housing units. So Minnesota is home to probably more cooperative activity than any other state in the country. 90% of the milk that is produced in the state of Minnesota is shipped through a cooperative. So the dairy industry is very important to the cooperative effort in Minnesota, as it is to the entire state of Minnesota. We, like a lot of people, are alarmed by the trends that are going on in the dairy industry. You heard the Minnesota Department of Ag talk about fewer farms, fewer cows, less production. This is an alarming trend to not only the dairy industry, but to the cooperative effort in Minnesota, because fewer cows means less milk going through cooperative our cooperative businesses. And I think we're something we need to be concerned about, because when we get fewer milk and less milk going through our cooperative cheese plants and butter plants, then those cooperatives are in trouble, and then that's fewer purchasers of milk for our farmers, for our dairy producers to go after. So the dairy investment tax credit is very important to one of our legislative efforts this coming session, because I think it provides an incentive for the producer to retool his production facility and try to maybe reverse some of those trends. Other than that, I think the other issues that are important to us, it was mentioned the permitting process, and we need to, you know, provide a clear, more defined way of maybe resizing and reshaping the dairy industry here in the state of Minnesota. And a couple other issues that we're concerned about is, like everybody, renewable energy is something that's very on the forefront of everybody in the agriculture industry across the state of Minnesota. And also the truck weight law. We need to maybe, there's come times of the year when ag producers have trouble getting their products from the farm to the markets because of some of our weight laws. The idea of putting an extra axle under those trucks that actually means less weight per axle on the road. And so that's one thing. I think another issue we may want to be taking a look at this upcoming session. So Steve and John, if they would have been here, they'd talk about their farms. Steve is with the Stearns County Dairy Farm Family of the Year, so he's very proud of his operation up in Stearns County and does a very, very good job. And they could do, as Bob mentioned, they could probably do a better job of talking about the dairy industry than someone like myself, although I did milk cows for 25 years of my life. So,
thank you, Mr. Ward, and we appreciate you being here, and welcome to your new job. And we suspect you'll do a good job over the years and be available to us when we need you to come in. Just a comment, and then I have a question or two here. Sure. From other members. I think, and maybe, I don't know if research can help us here or not, but a number of years ago we did pass a bill on the overweight trucks for dairy. And I think that's still on the books. If it's not, we need to revisit that quickly, because I know it had a sunset at one time. I actually carried the bill, so a number of years ago, because we did understand, for the members' sake that are new here, the federal licensing laws did not allow for a truck to, once they hooked onto a tank, they could not unhook from that tank, go in and come back out and recouple and take split loads. You have to empty the entire tank. Thus, on the larger tanks we have now, those trucks were having to leave overweight, particularly in the springtime. And we did give those folks an exception because of the federal rules that were in place, and we didn't want them to be breaking the law by traveling overweight. So I think that
that's still on the books, but we'll double check that. And but we're also working on a 10-ton road system. I know a lot of members on this committee are working on that actively or have signed onto the bill for all trucks and feed trucks and everything else to travel with a little more weight over 10-ton road systems in the state. So we'll not only building them, but then the overweight truck issue to travel on them. So,
well, the important thing is we, you know, the ability for us to get agriculture to get its product from farm to the market and not do an undue wear and tear on the road system,
right,
because that's expensive for everybody.
Representative Hagerkin.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. And one of my questions had to do with something you just covered. I know that we've had the discussion. I know you passed a bill.
Mm-hmm.
I know a bill passed last year, and there's another bill going forth that I signed on with Representative Ruth that has to do with the sugar beet, the vegetable processors are having problems within production time. And I think that the bill that was passed last year had to do with the milk trucks, they're within a certain proximity of unloading. They can be a little bit over, I think, or something, rather than splitting the loads when they pick up the farmers. And I think that was addressed last year. But my question has to do with one of the positive things happening out rural Minnesota has been ethanol, and the fact that it has, and it's creating a problem for the livestock farmer. I realize that. But at the same time, it's creating a lot of jobs. We're not sending out our corn anymore. We're doing something with our corn within the state. My question has to do with that. It's two-part. First of all, I serve on the Stearns County Advisory Dairy Advisory Board and the Central Minnesota Dairy Profits as well. But one of the issues always has been whether or not we're going to have enough dairies to sustain these processing plants. And they work hand in hand. We need both of them. My other question has to be, what percentage of the milk are we sending out not bottled or processed out of the state? I've never seen numbers on that. I was just wondering if you would have to know.
Sure. On your first question concerning loss of farms and production, and that is, it's kind of a fine line, and it's kind of the old what comes first, the chicken or the egg, because we need the agriculture producers, need the purchasers of milk, so we need to, they need to get a strong milk supply in to keep those plants running at capacity. And if we start losing that manufacturing infrastructure, the exodus of producers may accelerate than what it has been doing in the past because of lack of purchasers of milk. So it's one of those things that you, in other states and other industries, there's examples of what happens when the purchasers of the product, farm products, leave. Then the exodus of agriculture is not far behind. So that's a concern that we need to take a look at. We need to look at things like the dairy investment tax credit and a better permitting process so we can resize and reshape our dairy industry here in Minnesota so that production facility is attractive to pass on to the next generation. Your second question concerning the amount of milk that leaves the state unprocessed, that varies from time to time, and it's because there are other markets that rely on Minnesota and the upper Midwest for milk supply at various times of the year. The Southeast and Florida, they have a period of the year when their production is, meets their needs. Then they have periods of the year, more likely in the warmer summer months, when they need milk. So then they're reaching out to other parts of the country to get that milk. So I couldn't put an exact figure on it, but it varies from time to time. There are a lot of times, especially in the summer months, when there are probably loads of milk going south from the upper Midwest. There are times of the year when most of our product is manufactured and marketed out of state. And that's, I think, the way we'd like to do it. We'd like to add that value to it here in Minnesota and sell it to other parts of the country as cheese, butter, and other dairy products.
Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to invite Pat Luneman to come down and testify. I think he drove about 150 miles, and I appreciate that you're here, and so does the rest of the committee. So
Representative Hamilton has one question, and we'll bring Mr. Luneman down for a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ward, you talked about some issues or challenges that you have in permitting. Can you just enlighten us on what some of those are?
Well, I think it's been alluded to before, the difficulty and you know, what needs to be, what a producer needs to go through to get his, get a permit to resize or reshape or expand his or her operation. And a lot of times, just the thought of, you know, going through that process is a disincentive to actually go into it. I think what needs to be done is we need to have some clear, maybe a roadmap of what a producer would need to do to expand his or her operation and implement that, so when they're going into the process, they know what they can expect. They will not have a go three quarters of the way through the process and have their loan secured and have everything ready to go and have the contractor ready to, you know, move in the next day and start digging up ground, and then have a unit of government, whether it be a state, local, or county, come in and say, well, we're going to want to see a few more things, or we want to see this, or you have to do that, or whatever. So I think we need a clear set of, you know, kind of a roadmap as to how, what's expected of the producer, what's expected of the local unit of government, what's expected of state government. So going into the process, they know what they can expect, and they know what they have to do to have a positive ending.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. At this time, I know some of our, we have some late arrivals that were on the list. I want to get them up here for a few minutes, and then we'll move into the Dairy Investment Tax Credit Bill. Pat Luneman is here if he wants to come up and visit with a little bit on his. And then I see Representative Heigerkin's whispering in my ear that Steve Schlongen and perhaps John are here also. So we'll have them down right afterwards. Welcome. Maybe you can give us a road report and then proceed with your testimony. Introduce yourself, too.
Well, thank you, Chairman Junkie. The road report is it took 4 hours to do a 2-hour and 20-minute
drive.
Right.
Good. So we should bring that message over to the DOT and the Transportation Committee this morning.
After that long drive, I thought maybe that's the committee I should be speaking
to. Okay, very good.
Anyway, Mr. Chair, my name is Pat Luneman. I'm a dairy farmer from Clarissa, Minnesota, which is in the heart of Representative Otremba's district. I'm a third-generation dairy farmer there. My father and his parents were immigrants from Germany in the 20s and settled on the farm where we farm today. We've found the farm to be a marvelous place to raise a family. My wife and I have 6 children. And 5 sons and 1 daughter. We kept having sons before we got to the daughter stage. But our farm has transitioned from what was a 50-cow dairy when I took over along with my father. We went into partnership in 1979. And for a number of years, we kept it at that 50 to 60-cow level until we made a transition to 400 cows in the mid-90s. Now, that's a major change. Why would someone want to do that? I know that question always goes on in the industry today as to why you would want to have more cows. For us, it was a matter of opportunity and the change in lifestyle. All of my life, I've been pretty much a people person. So it only made more sense for me to work more with people than with cows. And by growing our dairy, we were able to do both. I think our dairy has been a tremendous asset to the community. It was at 50 cows, but I think it's even more so now at the level that it's at today. We have 14 employees. Our last little growth phase, we had a dairy farmer whose barn burned down, and we took his cows in. We worked with him on a share milking arrangement, and he helps raise our young stock and also grows crops for us. But we've focused on the dairy because that's what we like to do. And we have gone out to the other neighbors. We procure silage from them and sometimes hay, have them other people raising our livestock as well. And also just having more of a presence on Main Street, our local elevator feed supplier, being able to do business there. And we think that it's been a positive for the community to grow. And I would like to see others, other dairy producers in Minnesota have that chance as well. Oftentimes we talk about, well, larger dairies, you're producing a lot of things like noise and pollution and manure. I want to tell you something. My neighbors that provide us feed, and even others that don't, they're begging for our byproducts. In fact, I had one of my neighbors once say, why does my other neighbor get more manure than I do? I just want you to know that it's not always a problem in the rural community. I know that we could not survive without the support of our neighbors because they have been very instrumental in helping this along. It's kind of the center hub, so to speak. Even though I'm pretty much the, my wife and I own the dairy, and yes, we have a lot of cows, and we have 14 employees, I'm still involved. I'm still the one that gets the call at 2 in the morning if something goes haywire. I get to go fix it. But on the other hand, having a number of employees allows us to change our lifestyle so that we can come to St. Paul and talk to you, so that I can coach my son's basketball teams, which, in fact, I'm cutting out early today because my ninth grade son has a game and we're 10-0 and we want to take it to 11-0. Some of those things are really important. And dairy farmers in Minnesota have been wanting to make the transition to more of a, I don't know if I'd want to call it a suburban lifestyle, but one in which it's family friendly so that, yes, you're there most of the time, but maybe you can take some time during the week or on the weekend to take a few hours away to be with your children and your spouse and other family members. So I know that for me, if I had stayed at the smaller size, that would have been difficult. Now, is 500 cows for every dairy producer in Minnesota? No. But I do want to tell you here today that we need to make it possible for every dairy producer in Minnesota to operate at their optimum size, what they feel is appropriate for their business. And that's where the state of Minnesota can maybe give us some help. As dairy farmers, as we do our cash flows and our projections, dairy farming is not necessarily always a lucrative business. We like those years when that comes along, but sometimes it's pretty difficult to cash flow. So as we reinvest in our businesses, we need every little tiny thing that we can have to help us to make our cash flows work, to make our businesses profitable, and to be here long term. And that's why we've been asking for a dairy investment tax credit for a number of years now, and we're coming to you again asking that that be part of the program this year. The other issue that hits all of us is health care. We are struggling with, I know my family, my wife and I, it's $1,000 a month for health care. I've got a friend that sits with me on the Minnesota Milk Board. He and his wife, just the two of them, it's $1,600 a month. Now, he milks 50 cows. If you do the math and do the $1,600 a month, it's a little bit steep for those cows to try and pay those bills. So we need to make some changes. I believe under the Minnesota Care Rules, the Schedule F depreciation is not allowed. That needs to be fixed, and we need to make it possible for dairy producers in Minnesota to have access to health care and make it affordable. The other thing is permitting. Some of the most difficult times in my dairying career have been in the permitting process. I remember being in front of in the county commissioner's room asking for a permit and wondering why I was there, being so brutally beat up and abused by those who didn't believe that our operation was the right thing to have in our county. And I think that our permitting process needs to be streamlined, it needs to be fair, it needs to be scientifically based, and something that's more friendly to livestock in Minnesota. One other thing, I built my new dairy barn 10 years ago. And at the time, you have an idea of what the right thing to do is when you build it, and a year later, you always find out that, oh, I wish I had done it differently. And that's where the University of Minnesota needs to be doing more research for us so that we don't make our $100,000 mistakes on our own farms, that we get it done right the first time. Now, is that going to solve everything? No. But I believe that Minnesota needs to take the lead and have our own research facilities that are above and beyond what we have today. And I'm not blaming the university. I'm not blaming Extension. It's just that Minnesota needs to take leadership in this and get us some new facilities so that we as dairy farmers have the opportunity to have the knowledge up front ahead of time so that we're successful long term. Also, this whole idea of energy, you know, we use the byproducts of the ethanol industry. It's like a semi-load every 3 weeks that we use of distiller's grains. I think that there's some exciting things that could happen down the road as far as recycling energy from our dairy farms. And I don't know that I have any specific proposals for you today, but here at the legislature, you need to be cognitive of programs that could help us do a better job in recycling that energy on the farm. At this point, Mr. Chair, I thank you for my time here, and I would be willing to take questions.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming and braving the weather. And the only thing I noted when I saw you sit down is I think you are younger than the average dairy farmer in the state. So we appreciate your investment in that and your family's investment and your investment in the community. Are there any quick questions for Pat? Otherwise, I'd ask Steve and John to come down and give us their 2 cents worth, and then we'll have Representative Erdahl up and we'll move into the dairy investment tax credit bill. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. A lot of people, and maybe some even in this room, would consider your operation more of a corporate-style operation with 14 employees. How would you describe your operation?
Mr. Newman.
Mr. Chair, my wife and I are the full owners, sole owners of the dairy. My children are all too young to be part of the operation yet, although they do help out on weekends and summers. My sons always remind me of when the employees don't show up, that remember that night, Dad, when you went to the cities for a meeting and we had to milk all night long? So there is family involvement. Is it different than the norm? Yes, it is. Two of my key employees are former dairy producers who decided that one had 35 cows near Deer Creek, Minnesota, and he decided that it just wasn't working out, so he sold his cows 10 years ago, and a year later he came on board for me. So in November of 97, he came to work with me. Is he part owner? No, but he's been with me for 9 years. As key to the operation as my lead herdsman, he's running the show there today without me. Another fellow who's been with me for about 5 years is a feeder. He lives at Bertha, Minnesota, sold his cows 6 years ago. He felt that he just couldn't make it at the size that he was at, so he came on board with us. That's kind of how this is pulled together for us. And then we also have others in the community, of course, that work for us that don't have dairy backgrounds. But we put together a team that I like to think, even though everyone doesn't have ownership in the operation, that they are part of it. Now, I have offered a piece of the pie to my herdsman, but he said, if I go home and tell my wife that I want to invest in the dairy, she'll kill me. So I say that tongue-in-cheek here, but, you know, he feels it's important, and he's just as much a part of it as we are, just not on the bottom line.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
If you join us at the table, we appreciate you braving the elements and stopping in to see us today at the committee hearing, and I guess I'll let you introduce yourselves and proceed the way you want. Get the important things out you'd like the committee to hear, and then we'll move into the dairy investment tax credit. And if you have anything to say on that, you're welcome to that also.
I am John from Camelos, and I'll allow Steve to go first.
This is I'm Steve Schlungen from Central Minnesota by Albany, Stearns County. My wife and I run a 60 to 70 cow dairy operation with 200 acres of land, and about 13 years ago, we expanded our facilities and built a freestall barn with a milking parlor system. Basically, what we did, we went from 40 cows to 60, 70 cows, and we reduced our workload and increased our profitability, and our cash flow was way better. I just think operations like that could really help the state of Minnesota, just to get people updated and on track so they can be efficient and compete with the rest of the country. I know David had talked about MAC and their stand on this dairy investment tax credit bill, and I serve on the board of MAC, and I'm glad he covered that already, so at least that's done, and I don't want to hold up the show by going over it again. So thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Yes, I'm John Funk. We farm south of Melrose, along with my wife and my three sons. We have a 500 cow plus dairy, in which we have about 11 full-time employees and also some part-time employees. Along with our dairy operation, we also farm about 1,100 acres of land. Our expansion started in 1997, which is about 10 years ago. Since that time, we have built in three different phases up to the level that we're at. The children of mine are all married family members that live off the farm, and they do have shares in our operation a little bit different than what Mr. Ludeman alluded to earlier. As far as the investment tax credit, I really ask for your support. I'm going to go probably to a different area, whatever, but some years ago, I believe in the state of Minnesota put a priority in supporting ethanol and gave some rebates to individuals and for some tax incentives to those producers. And I think as we enter into this era of higher fuel prices, I think we all find that the investment that we made in the state of Minnesota and some of our ethanol plants has been very good, as Commissioner Hugesson has pointed out here just recently in one of his releases. And I think as we look at the data from the dairy farmers that have been exiting the state of Minnesota, I think that help we also need in the dairy industry, in that individuals such as myself and others, we need to have what I would refer to as good infrastructure for our young producers to allow them to take over their either their family farm or some other farm, and we need to help those individuals to get started, because there's many older producers that want to go out, and we need to help those producers as they go. So, and I, along with Steve, also would say that we heard from, I'm also a MAC council member, and support their dairy investment tax credit.
Well, thank you, and thank you both for being here. If we would have had another 15 minutes, we were going to spend that on discussions about your state representative, good and bad. But would that have been all right? Your state representative has a question. Representative Heiger.
Thank you. Just a comment, again, just a reminder to folks here. Both these producers here are small operators. John, as you had mentioned, three sons out there, that you and your wife out there working as well. And Mr. Strong in here as well as 60 cow operators. They're both very, very active in their community. I know they're very, John's been chair of Melrose School Board for many years. But again, the importance to the small producers and the importance of this bills that we're going to hear, Representative Junkie and Representative Erdahl, are very, very important to both of you and to the entire dairy industry, at least in my district. But thank you for coming down here and testifying.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Erdahl, you want to go up to the table and join me in presenting these bills? Members, right now we'll bring up, we'll be looking at both House File 9 and House File 52, which are the same thing, dairy investment tax credit bill, and we'll present them as bookends here, if that's all right with Representative Erdahl. He's got his little milk there, and I got mine in front of me, I guess, too, so we're okay. Members, this is a bill, certainly, that's been around for a number of years. To those of you that have been on the committee before or been here, you're aware of it. For those new members, I think you're fully informed on it, too, probably, but that said, we do want to have some testimony on it. In your file, you'll find a fiscal note that we'll be working with this year. This was updated on January 30th by the Department of Revenue. You can see about a $4.9 and $5 million cost over the next 2 years, and then goes up slightly in the next biennium. This bill, as you know, is a bill that allows for a tax credit to dairy operators who improve their facilities. On the first $500,000, they're allowed up to 10% or $50,000 tax credit. So, you know, that's a substantial amount of money and something we hope would certainly be the catalyst for some upgrading on dairy barns and facilities around the state. We have heard how important that is, and we certainly want to go down that road. I'll also tell you, members, that this bill, I think there's some other discussion that needs to be done on it. We will move it out of this committee, but not today. It's the chair's wish that Representative Finstead, you and your group and our group, I've been asking for suggestions, not only if we keep it a tax credit bill, but perhaps there's other ways we can look at this, too. Maybe using some of that one-time money up front, and allowing some grants up front of similar amounts might be a better way. I know I always like to get cash up front if I'm doing something rather than having to apply and get it in the rears. That's a possibility. We also, I think, want to discuss a lot of groups around the state. While dairy has been the main focus, we understand the importance of all livestock in this state, and we certainly want to understand if there's something we can do to at least inkle some future development, whether it's beef or swine, Representative Hamilton, or poultry, which is important in a lot of our areas, or for heaven's sakes, we have goats now that are growing in the state and we may need some help with. So we want to explore whether we should expand the bill somewhat as we go forward, too, again, keeping the focus on dairy. Representative Erdahl, something to add, and why Representative Erdahl is talking, I'd ask the Minnesota Milk Producers folks who want to testify on this to make their way down to the front so we can get yours. I don't know if they're in or not. We had Sherman Schuler from Wilmer on the list and Andrew Goldberg from Deer Creek. I don't know if either of them made it. If they did, work your way down while Representative Erdahl is giving his opening comments.
I'd like to thank everyone for being here today, and Representative Junkie for the efforts that he's put forth for dairy this year. For the past 4 years, we've been working on this investment tax credit for dairy. The importance of the industry has already been amplified by several people here today. Since we began pushing this bill, about 1,296 dairy farmers have left dairy, and we need to do something. Representative Junkie was just suggesting that, you know, maybe there are some other ways to look at this. You know, I think that that could be the case. But, you know, we have to do something for dairy. I have another bill myself that expands the credit to all livestock, another bill that extends the sales tax exemptions to bins, construction, fencing, tires. And so there are other things to look at, but I think we have to you know, keep the focus on dairy because they are, I think, the most endangered of our agricultural businesses today. And if we are successful with this, it's the result of cooperation, bipartisanship, building coalitions over the years, and I think it'll serve us in good stead as we try to get through this.
Thank you. The first
testifiers would join us. You know, pull up an extra chair there. The page can help us with that. I think Representative Earle makes a good point to members and members of the audience, too. This is not either of our bills. It's our bill. It's a committee bill. It'll be a bill of the legislature, and we hope we can move it out and advocate for it bipartisanly, and everyone can be proud to take ownership of this bill if and when that day comes that it crosses the finish line. Let's knock on wood and hope that's this year. So please introduce yourselves and for the record, and give us your testimony on the Dairy Investment Tax Credit Bill.
My name is Sherman Schuler. I'm from the Wilmer, Minnesota area. I farm dairy farm with my brother. And we are members also of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. That's a grassroots volunteer dairy farmer organization. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify. We grew up on a typical dairy farm, 24 cows, a few hogs. When I came out of the Navy in the 70s, my dad was phasing out. My brother took over the 24-cow dairy. I went down the road with the hogs and did the crop farming. Of course, by the 80s, we were into a little bit of financial trouble. I went back to my flying skills and ended up flying for a brand-new airline called Sun Country. By the early 90s, though, my brother could tell that he had expanded to 30 cows, but his income 15 years after starting was still the same as what he had had before. And that's, I think, kind of, so you either had to continue to grow, but by the time he saw it, we also had an option of going into a freestall barn with a parlor system, and we did opt to go for that route. We think that might be where the dairy is going to go. There's two reasons we did it. Lifestyle, a commitment to dairying is twice a day, 365, and also labor efficiency. And what I'm talking about there is the typical barn. We get about 20 cows per man hour. Our medium small size parlor does about 40 cows per man hour. And if you go to the Western, and we got a few big ones in Minnesota also, they get upwards of 90 cows milked per man hour. That's something that we in Minnesota, as we compete with our Western, have to keep in mind. That doesn't mean the smaller dairies can't compete. There's a lot of them in Minnesota. A lot of them are doing a great job. They're doing it with very low overhead, very low debt or no debt. And so they are still able to compete. Anyway, we end up going with the parlor. We now have 240 milking cows, double six parallel parlor. Our production number is about 22,000 rolling herd average, 3.7 butter fat, 3.1 protein, and we're kind of proud of our 125 somatic cell count. We have three full-time and a half a dozen, seven, eight part-time employees, a payroll of 2.25 to 250,000. All the businesses we deal with are probably within a 40-mile radius of us, and we do use a lot of Bridgewater Botec ag students for our part-time labor. I want to put on just a little bit different hat. I'm also part of the Economic Development Commission in Wilmer, and we have an ag and renewable energy committee, and we have made it a high priority to maintain our livestock industries and encourage them in if we possibly can, with emphasis on dairy. That's where this dairy investment tax credit could be of real help. And I want to just look a little bit to the future, something I'm very excited about, and it's called VMS, Voluntary Milking System, or Robotic Milking. I'm very high on that, both for us to take a look at it and for the dairy industry in Minnesota. My reasons are the cost per cow to build that is very similar to the cost to build the typical freestall parlor system, where you got to get to some fairly good numbers to get that efficiency. Because of that, we can be cost competitive with the bigger dairies at a much smaller number. I also believe Minnesota is well positioned because we have owner-operators, so we got what you might call a very educated workforce, and they are going to be very capable of handling that type of a system. I envision probably down the road a lot of dairies are going to walk their way up, and if my vision is correct, and believe me, this has to be proven, it's very new, it's coming out of Europe, and it's just coming to the U.S. But I can see 500 to 600 cow dairies with two or three farmers operating them very successfully. For us to remain competitive in the dairy industry, I do believe we're going to have to do some retooling and revamping, and that dairy investment tax credit, I think, will go a lot, not only to help the financially, but it's also a moral boost to the people out there who are sometimes struggling. And I think some of these new expansions are going to require creative financing, maybe a little bit of outside capital, and that's where that thing is really going to help. And as the EDC, I like this as a tool that we can use to help producers in our area. Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for this opportunity. I strongly urge you to pass the dairy investment tax credit. I think it's good for the dairy industry, rural Minnesota, and I certainly hope that it is a good policy. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Schuler, we appreciate you being here, and we always like to remind Representative Heigerkin there is dairy south of Stearns County also, so that's always a good thing. Representative Magnus has a question.
It's in the Murray County, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a question, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure it's for you or Representative Erdahl, but as my recollection of this, just a little bit of history on this bill is that I think this is your fourth year to carry this, Representative Erdahl, I believe, and it's been included in the omnibus tax bill in the House, I think, 3 years now, has it not?
At least two.
2 years, okay. So 2 years, we in the House have passed this into our omnibus tax bill, and only to get into the conference committee with the Senate and lose it there because of lack of support in the Senate. And I guess my question is, when we go down this road again, I know the Senate, the former committee, the tax committee chairman of the Senate's moved on now. He's now the majority leader of the Senate. But do we have any sense from the Senate? Are they going to step up and support this program now, or are we going to go down to do all the work again and then hit a dead end of the road? That's my question of you both.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Magnus, once again, we have, you know, Governor Pawlenty's support on this. It's in his budget. I would, the optimist in me says this time we're going to do it for sure. I said that a year ago, too. You don't know what, there are unforeseen roadblocks that happen. You know, as you were saying, we thought that going to the conference committee last time that we had it. But all, for people in the audience, in a conference committee, you have to have 6 votes to pass a bill, 3 from the House and 3 from the Senate. It can't be, 5 from one side and 1 from the other. It's got to be 3 and 3. And we had 3 House members vote for it, and for whatever reason, we didn't get the votes in the Senate that we thought that we had. Certainly that could happen again, but I'm optimistic that the dynamics this time are such that we will be successful.
They are a pesky lot, Representative Magnus, but we're going to deal with them, and the new tax chair is from rural Minnesota. I think that will help, so we'll work on it.
My suggestion is you work with that tax committee chairman early on this thing, and don't get caught into what's happened here when we have what's in this for me in the metro area? What's in this for me when you start getting up the trade bait in the tax committee? So my suggestion to both of you as we move forward with this is you work with the new tax committee chairman.
I have another witness. Please introduce yourself for the tape and give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Goldberg, and I own and operate a 73 cow dairy near Deer Creek in west central Minnesota. I would first like to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the Dairy Investment Tax Credit authored by Representative Junkie and others. Dairy farming has been a dream and passion of mine ever since I was a little boy. I've never for once doubted that it was what I wanted to do. In the early 80s, my parents had a dairy farm near Lake Park, Minnesota, which struggled through high interest rates and eventually failed. And then we moved into the town of Moorhead, and we had a retail dairy distributor business, home-to-home milkman kind of thing. And eventually, in 1998, we returned to a farm that we're currently living at in Deer Creek. Through high school, we didn't have a dairy farm. We had We had a cow-calf beef operation and ran the 200 acres. And we also raised some steers. And I basically got involved in dairy, working on other farms, neighboring dairy farms, and dreamed of the time when I could do something at home and give it a try for myself. About the beginning of my junior year of college at the University of Minnesota here in St. Paul, my parents and I started talking seriously about getting back into dairying and giving me an opportunity. In the winter, we started gutting and cleaning up our 45 cow stanchion barn that was on the farm, and to make room for our new swing pen milking parlor, our utility room, milk house, office, and holding area. Through that summer, we worked on our new facility, and in October of my senior year, with the help of some of my classmates, we moved our herd of cows in and started milking. All through my senior year of college here at the U, every weekend and every day that I had off, I put many miles on my pickup and many hours on my cell phone, managing the herd and milking on the weekends, relieving my dad. And we had a neighbor, one of my neighbor friends, was helping us on the weekends or during the week. And in May, I graduated with my degree from the U of M. In animal science with a dairy production emphasis, and have been farming at home ever since. Okay, today our herd is 73 cows. We've been adding some cows through the summer, and we house our cows in a compost bedded pack barn that we remodeled. And in October, I purchased all of the livestock from my father, all of the replacements and all of the lactating cows, and I currently rent the facility from my dad and buy the homegrown forages that I help him raise during the summer. Our future plans right now are to add 120 cows beginning this summer. We're hoping to construct a four-row sand-bedded freestall barn and do some remodeling to one of our facilities that we have now to make a new transition cow, provide some room for our close-up cows and our calving cows. And we would also like to build a mini pit den and increase our feed storage. The reasons that we're doing this, we need to maximize our investment that we made in our milking parlor costs on that, increased during construction, and we under-guessed what we thought we were going to spend on that. So pretty much we need to maximize that investment, get some more cows going through that parlor to make it pay. We also would like to have the farm provide enough income for both of my fiance Chelsea and I and my parents' families to get from the farm, so we don't have to work off. Also, we'd like to improve our family living and lifestyle goals that we have kind of established. Let's see. By adding the barn, we're going to solve some things. We will be eliminating some of the outside lots that we're housing. It was too expensive for us to build a facility to handle the cows right away with the investment that we made in our parlor. So we were kind of housing some cows outside, and there's some runoff issues that we will be hoping to handle a little bit better. And also with the other investments, we'll just be able to make our farm more efficient with the labor that we have and provide more income. Let's see. The way that the bill is laid out is good for me because it gives us 7 years if we decide when we're going to make the expansion at the right time when we can afford it the best. And it's also beneficial to other farmers that might be waiting for, like, a family member to finish college or a young son, like I was. My dad was waiting for me to come home. We started a little bit earlier because my mom lost her job and we needed to get the farm rolling and producing income. But giving it 7 years, I feel, helps, you know, some of those families that might, you know, if you have a young person involved, you know, having an opportunity to make an investment and provide some interest to that person makes it more, makes it more something that they might want to return to rather than just the same 40 cow dairy or whatever that dad has had forever. The bill also allows me to carry the credit for 15 years, which means that it maximizes the incentive that my family can get that the state is providing. Because the first year of our investment, obviously, we probably won't have much of a tax liability because it's such a large investment, usually, you know, upwards of $250,000 to make the jump to 120 cows that we're, that's just for the facility. And I guess allowing it to go 15 years also allows for, like, fluctuating milk prices or good and bad years. You might have more or less of a liability, tax liability, and you could still maximize that incentive. I guess I also think that the $500,000 or $50,000 total tax credit available is important numbers to keep because it's easy to see that just going through an expansion with what our parlor costs and everything, and in the last year the construction costs have jumped again, so it's easy to spend $500,000 on a facility even to just get to 120 cows, which is closer to the average size dairy in Minnesota than we are right now. In closing, I would like to say that I'm thankful to have this opportunity to speak in favor of such a crucial piece of legislation. I know the difference that it would make for my family, and I know that for fellow dairy producers trying to reach their goals in their small business, it would be very beneficial. And I think it sends a message to all of Minnesota, not just the dairy farmers, that we care about rural Minnesota and preserving all of the industry that small farmers support. And I also think that it would be very, very beneficial to young farmers such as myself. I know that, you know, I wouldn't have been interested in coming back home if we couldn't have done something interesting, made an investment that I felt I was a part of and made it more viable. I guess I would like to thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg. We like having U of M graduates here, and we like seeing the next generation of dairy farmers. I thought Pat Luneman was bringing the average age down, but you're helping even more. So thank you for that, and thank you for investing in Minnesota dairy. That's important, and we expect to see you down here again at the Capitol. You look like a person who might follow legislation pretty closely over the next few years as you get into your business a little more, and we appreciate that attention. So thanks for being here. Members, thank you both. We're going to get to a couple people that are out of town. I know we're over, but with weather constraints, we want to make sure we get everyone in that was late coming. So if I'd ask Farm Bureau and Farmers Union to wait, if you would, politely. And I'd ask at this time, Farm Credit Services has someone from Baldwin. I want to get up here before they take off. If they could come down. Here we go. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for driving in and coming in from, I believe, our neighboring state. So this is truly interesting, and we look forward to your brief testimony. Please introduce yourself for the tape and who you represent.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Greg Steele. I work as Vice President of Agribusiness Capital for AgStar Financial Services, which has lending authorization in both states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm here to provide a little bit different perspective on the investment tax credit. I had some opportunity to be involved in the lobbying and the development of it in the state of Wisconsin and have saw some of the impact. What I do for my job is I work as a lender that specializes in providing financing to dairymen who reinvest and grow their business. I have the opportunity to work in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Dakotas, and I have seen firsthand the good, the bad, the ugly of that process in all three states. And I'd encourage you to look at this. This is about Minnesota today, but the upper Midwest really has to look at itself as a region. Wisconsin has a 1.2 million cows. I think Minnesota is somewhere around 400,000 to 500,000 cows. The state of Michigan has 800,000 cows. In order for the Minnesota, which is an important part of the Midwest, to compete, they have to compete against the West, the Southwest, and the Northwest. And that's in order to do that, the production on an average per cow basis lags in the Midwest. I would say largely due because they haven't been able to adopt the new technology and the labor-efficient systems in order to achieve that production. When they have been able to adopt that, and many of the people that are up here before me today are a great illustration of that, they can compete. They can produce milk for $13 a hundredweight, which is very important to do going forward. The impact, in my opinion, in the state of Wisconsin has been pretty significant. I'll give you a few numbers here. In 2004, 43% of the dairy producers, totaling about 7,000, claimed $13.1 million in investment tax credits. That was the first year it was available. In 2005, 40% of the dairy producers, totaling about 6,500 producers, claimed $12 million in tax credits for that year and carried $26 million in tax credits for future years, for years where they're going to have more profitability. The investment tax credit Wisconsin was expanded from dairy to include all livestock. The reason that's important is producers invest into free stalls, parlors, facilities that allow them to capture economies of scale and become more efficient. Is they use all their capital for that dairy production site, and they try to find housing from farmers who chose maybe not to milk cows any longer. They went into another business. They raise heifers. They provide ancillary services for these dairies that are expanding. They, too, can benefit by the investment tax credit. So they have incentive to invest in the facilities, again, to allow the growth of the industry. My comments in closing is that, you know, this is a very, very competitive and dynamic business. The ethanol industry, the increase in corn prices, quite frankly, may make the Midwest more competitive. It's a great production area for feed. There's plentiful byproducts. Right now, I can tell you, for a fact, the Southwest is really having a difficult time with their cost of production because they're paying $4 plus per bushel. They're concerned it's going to go higher. The Midwest has a natural hedge because they produce most of their crop, and if they don't produce most of their crop, they can make arrangements with their neighboring crop farmer in exchange for nutrients for that crop production. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the committee today. I strongly encourage you to look at this from a state of Minnesota perspective, but from a regional perspective. The Midwest can be very competitive long term. This investment tax credit will allow the producers of Minnesota to encourage their investment, adopt technology, adopt best management practice to allow them to be competitive long term. Thank you.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Steele, and we appreciate you braving the weather and coming across the border.
Yeah, so if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll dismiss you for now, and I will bring up Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, and we'll end with LSP. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. Give your name for the record, who you represent, and we're happy to hear your testimony.
My name is Kevin Papp. I'm president of Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. My wife Julie is with me today, and I raise corn, soybeans, and boys on our farm in Blue Earth County, which we left the driveway at 7:30 this morning, by the way. Thank you, Chairman Junkie and members, for the opportunity to appear before you today. I'm here representing Minnesota Farm Bureau, a grassroots membership organization representing farmers and from 78 organizing counties. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports passage of a state income tax credit for investment in livestock farms. We do this for five quick reasons. Number one, this is good for our members that are dairy farmers. It gives them the opportunity to upgrade and modernize facilities and equipment, improve animal care and safety, improve manure handling and storage. Number two, this is good for our members that are concerned about their local economy. concerned about their businesses on Main Street, their school district, their churches, and their community. Dairy cows are powerful economic engines that generate income, business activity, and jobs. We all know about the Department of Ag study that talks about over $15,000 of economic activity per cow. Number three, this is good for our Farm Bureau members that are adding value by being involved in renewable fuel production of ethanol and biodiesel. The Minnesota biofuels industry needs Minnesota animal agriculture. Livestock consume the co-products. You can't be for value-added renewable fuel and against animal agriculture. They need each other to be sustainable. Number four, this is good for our members that want to bring the next generation back to the farm. Livestock requires more people. Livestock requires labor. Living year-round in rural Minnesota. More families equal more kids into school, equal more people to use the local businesses. This is good for our economy. This is good for our neighborhoods. And number five, and probably most important, this is good for our members and all farmers that are concerned about the environment. Dairy is based on renewable resources. More cows equal more pasture and hay equals more crop diversity. Again, better for the environment. We know that fields properly fertilized with manure have reduced runoff and soil loss. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Papp. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I serve as Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'm just going to give you the Reader's Digest version because I think that all the reasons for this bill have been heard. But as the bill progresses into the tax committee, and we've watched this bill for several years, that we need to make a good case for it. And I provided you with some of the information from the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, which I think lays it out and looks at the fact, but I also just printed this off this morning, was the last tax year I could find was 2005. And it has all the classifications. If you're interested in looking at it, we could make copies of it perhaps. But it does show that, you know, a lot of the farmers between that had a gross income of $15,000 to $100,000 are the people that are really using this credit. And a lot of those are the type of people that I represent. And they're getting the average credit of about $1,800 a year. But, like, for example, in the $30,000 to $40,000 income range, 1,115 producers used that in 2005 in Wisconsin. I think that's really impressive. And that's a lot of infrastructure if you think of the investment going on those farms. So again, I urge your consideration. I urge you to look at these numbers and help us make the case for this as it goes farther in the committee process. Thank you.
And if you would provide that to the committee, we'd appreciate some time. Well, thank you both for coming. Appreciate the Southern Minnesota drive up, too. I'm from Wells, Minnesota, so I like Southern Minnesota guys, too. LSP, is Y still here, or did he skip out? All right. Welcome to the committee, and as you know, we're very short of time, but we always want to appreciate having anyone that came in from out of town, and I know you have an out-of-town guest here, too. So.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project. Our organization is a farm and rural organization that supports sustainable agriculture. We appreciate the past work over the last 2 years that Representative Erdahl has brought forward to this bill. Representative Junkie, we appreciate the support of you in terms of bringing this forward. I'd like to address just one issue and then turn this over to Dave Menar to testify. The issue of profitability was brought before in terms of this committee. And we would just like to say there's more than one way in terms of approaching profitability. One is the piece in terms of people expanding and achieving economies of scale. We believe that only can go so far. We also think that the other piece is to look at new market opportunities. And that is, in a growing field, happens to be in sustainable agriculture and also in organic agriculture. With that, I'd like to just simply relinquish my time to Mr. Menar.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Dave Menar, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm really pleased to be here this morning. I'm going to talk off the cuff because our story is pretty long. From the tip of my hair, you can tell we've been around for a while. Lawrence is sitting up in the audience, my wife. Our family operates Cedar Summit Farm at New Prague, just an hour south of here. It's a farm that my granddad bought in 1926, and we're the third generation. Our children are fourth generation on this farm. We've been farming there since 1969 when we took over from my parents, and made a lot of transitions over the years. Maybe we had a lot more guts than a lot of people thought we had, but we converted our farm to a grazing system in the early 90s. And sat down with the family, had some brainstorming sessions in the later 90s, asking what could we do to increase the revenue from this farm. And these brainstorming sessions were really interesting. I won't get into all the details, but the final outcome was that maybe we could bottle our own milk and sell it. So at that time, we started researching this, if we could do this, and we did finally in 2002. It'll be almost 5 years now that we built a creamery on our farm, and we bottle milk, make ice cream there right now, and sell it all over the Twin Cities area. We have a truck that comes in, recently decorated truck, if you see, with our milk cartons and bottles on the side of the truck. That's ours. It just got it done this week. So it'll be a really traveling billboard for us, and we're pretty excited about the opportunities this offers our family. We have all of our children basically involved in this. Two sons are full-time. We pulled one out of industry. He was making good money. He's a biologist. He runs our creamery for us. Another son, quite a bit younger, Dan, he's our marketer. We have our daughter, Laura's involved in there part-time, and Mike's wife is Mary Sue, who is our office manager. We also have a daughter-in-law that's really not involved in day-to-day basis, but she does all of our accounting for us. A son-in-law that's a computer guru that build all their computer systems for us. We also involve a lot of community in our efforts. We don't own a lot of equipment. We rely on local farmers to bale hay for us, to wrap hay for us, to MTR lagoons out onto our pastures. We milk about 150 cows. We graze 190 acres and run another 200 acres of forage land for winter feed. We also employ we write 16 paychecks every 2 weeks. Most of those are full-time paychecks. We're proud of the impact that we're making on the local economy. So we really support this, especially the part that pertains to pasture development and on-farm processing and delivery vehicles. We think this is really important. You know, Florence and I had that reinforced to us when we were able to travel to Italy last October to Slow Foods International event, Terra Madre. It involved 5,000 local producers from all over the world meeting joint sessions. And part of this was a local food show called Salone del Gusto. And if you're ever in Italy in end of October, this is something everyone has to witness. Every small producer in Italy was there selling their product, be it cheese or meats or milk or whatever. You know, and you could walk it. There were literally hundreds of booths in this huge auditorium. Used to be the old Fiat factory where they built the Fiats years ago, renovated this building. And there were literally hundreds of producers. Each had their little stall, and you'd walk up to them and taste their food, taste their cheese, taste their meat. Who made this? I did, was the answer. I did. They all represented themselves there that day, and it was a wonderful experience. Granted, Italy has a 2,000-year history where they've been able to develop their food culture. I think having this food processing, milk processing on the farm here is a step in the right direction, because I think, you know, we've only been at it 200 years in our country to develop a food culture. And I think this gives us the opportunity to do this. I'll entertain any questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and maybe we got an idea for that old Fort plant now. take care of that, Representative Vertel, on our next bill. But seriously, I think members, if we can get this taken care of this year, along with the Farm Z bill, which would have been ideal, it's exactly what we're talking about, is a value-added operation on the farm and bringing that Job Z zone right to the farm. I think combined, those two would be two powerful tools. We'd see a lot of interesting development in the rural areas. So thank you very much for being here. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple questions. First of all, Mr. Sobosinski, I want to say thank you for the conversation that you and I had in the hall the other day. I appreciate that. And I just wanted to get that on record. All right. As far as you're talking about different sizes of operations and stuff like that,
we heard testimony from Mr. Pat Luneman. As far as land stewardship project, do you agree that there's room for operations such as Mr. Luneman's also? I guess the reason I bring that up is because when it comes to agriculture, you know, we're less than 2% of the total population. And all too often, there's different entities that start struggling and battling between each other, divide and conquer. And I think agriculture really needs to do its part in pulling together and being a solid voice. And I love to hear your story. You know, that was awesome. It was extremely intriguing. And, you know, I would love to be able to share that with others, too, as far as what you do. I guess my point is I want to make sure that agriculture is coming together to where we're all promoting the positives, the goods of everybody, and not trying to tear down one side of the industry to promote another. And so just my question is this, Mr. Sobosinski, do you think there's room for Mr. Operations like Mr. Luneman's also?
Mr. Sobosinski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, yes, I do. And I think part of the piece or part of the polarization that perhaps occurs in agriculture comes when often enough people do not sit down with their neighbors and talk with their neighbors. Part of the conversation that you and I had as it related to Renville County related to that fact, and then there was a change. Now, I do happen to believe, and our organization has a philosophy or a belief that, you know, that the family farm system probably brings the most dollars back to the community. That happens to be a belief. That does not mean that other operations in the state can't and shouldn't exist. We as an organization obviously believe very strongly in local control, the rights of counties and units to have a determination in terms of, you know, setting livestock operations. But again, I think that can be done in a way that's, you know, compatible in terms of the community. And it's important that people get along. And I think that's important. And, you know, and I respect operations that are of a larger size and the people. They may not meet the parameters of what our organization may exactly look at or our members may be about. But we do believe in being respectful. And we do believe in local people having the right to make decisions.
Okay. Thank you. We'll dismiss you and get Wyspano down here, and that'll be our final witness for this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, is,
yes, Representative
is Wise coming down, Representative Hamilton and others. I think that this bill is a good example of bringing agricultural groups together from all parts of the spectrum to be on board with one positive project.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wise Spano. I've represented the Dairies Federation of Minnesota for 27 years now. I'm actually now, as some of the members know, really an educator. So I'm not around the Capitol very much anymore.
Hopefully you're getting an education from us today. That's what we hope.
You always provide an education.
That's true.
I just wanted to say on behalf of the dairy, I represent these folks and others, the ones who put the milk in the bottles and put it out on the shelves and sell it. We need milk, and so anything you can do to help have more milk in Minnesota, we really would appreciate. Our members generally take Minnesota milk and sell it in Minnesota, and particularly in Chicago. It's one of the largest export markets we have. We need a lot of milk, and the supply in Minnesota hasn't been going up as rapidly as it has, for instance, in Wisconsin. And whenever we can, we want to buy Minnesota milk. So, Lord love you.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you, members, for your time today. Tomorrow we'll be visiting on ethanol. Thanks to all the growers and producers in the room. We appreciate your company. Meeting is adjourned.